You're listening to Tucson Tech Talk with your host, Aaron Moss, on Tucson Business Radio X.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Tucson Tech Talk on the Tucson Business Radio X Network. I'm your host, Aaron Moss, broadcasting from the Stewart Title Building on Broadway in Tucson, Arizona. Our focus on the show today is technology in real estate, and we have three guests with us today. I'd like to go around the table and kind of introduce them. First, on my left is someone from Chicago, an educator and small business owner. She's bought and sold properties from around the United States. She also knows what it's like to go through the process, which drives her commitment to her clients. She says knowledge, her integrity, and diligence makes her uniquely qualified to serve and protect her clients through every part of their real estate transaction. She is also one of a small percentage of Arizona realtors who have earned the GRI designations, which stands for a Graduate Realtor Institute. She also takes full advantage of the digital environment, which she says has become the backbone of the real estate industry. She's an e-pro professional and social media marketing platform expert. She also serves on the Professional Development Committee on the Tucson Association of Realtors and a sponsor of Meet Me at Maynard's, and a volunteer at the Tucson Meet Yourself and the Tucson Folk Festival. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Carol Nigut to the program.
Thank you, Aaron. I'm glad to be here.
Okay. Next on my right, we have a 1972 business graduate of the University of Arizona, a Vietnam vet. He was involved with real estate industry for over 40 years, including also a certification as a real estate instructor, including a current holder of the GRI designation as well of the Realtor Institute, and owning the Tucson School of Real Estate for over 30 years. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Frank First.
Thank you, Aaron.
Okay. And our last guest is the broker and owner of Century Realty. She's an entrepreneur, community icon, advocate, leader, and philanthropist, and over 25 years, she has promoted and facilitated thousands to home ownership, land purchases, commercial and investment properties in Arizona. She is a strong believer in property ownership as being one of the cornerstone foundational rights of our country, making stronger communities and giving people the roots to thrive. She is a proud advocate of the LGBTQ rights and continues tirelessly to work towards their equality and acceptance. She supports many causes for rights and well-being of others, including alcoholism, drug dependence, the poor, the addicted, and all other types of suffering that people end up in circumstances with. Her community service even extends to the Haven Pima County Jail and Alcohol Anonymous. She has empowered women to overcome gender bias issues, and she has committed all her strength of will and charisma to connect with others to make positive changes in the community. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Colette Bejaras to the
Thank program. You, Aaron. Okay. And Carol, I'm a Chicagoan too.
Hey, two Chicagos, two GRIs. Very nice. So one of the reasons why we wanted to do this show is, like we were talking about before the show even started, you know, with the invention of, for example, the tractors, that kind of eliminated farmers needing to go out. Nowadays, you know, kids, they think that milk comes from the supermarket, and they don't even know what a cow does. So we can see how technology even starts to create a generation of where people don't even know how to do things, you know, prior to that. And that's what that's how advancement of technology happens. So I'd like to just now we do have questions that we're going to be asking our panel, but I just want to just put this out there, and you guys just click a buzzer and just start talking. But we all are familiar with MLS. MLS is kind of like the original program or one of the original platforms. I'm sure there was a platform. You guys have been decades in the industry, but. Is there life beyond MLS? And if so, where is technology going?
The MLS is the official repository for all sales transactions, listings. There are, since we're talking about technology, what has happened over the years is now we have commercial websites who actually, we all know Zillow, Trulia, Redfin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they mimic to a large extent what the multiple listing service does, and they draw from what we call the IDX feed. They draw their data from the multiple listing service, but they aren't as effective or as efficient because they aren't updated correctly, they aren't timely. So the multiple listing service, while the technologies associated with the multiple listing service have changed, it remains the official repository for real estate listings.
Official repository.
That would be my definition.
Great definition. And I think also to piggyback on what Carol said is that these companies who have Zillow on those, they've really actually, in some sense, made our jobs easier, although they're not accurate. I find that if I put a new listing and it's completely renovated, they may show old pictures of when it was beat up. So you get your seller call you, all angry. Why are these pictures up there? We have no control over what Zillow, Open Door, you know, all these companies out there are doing. So in one sense that our buyers and sellers go to them for knowledge, which is incorrect, so we then have to educate them. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the best things that even all the technology, that we as humans, having the relationship to educate our buyers and sellers in the process, it helps them lower their stress level and really understand, you know, we are the source of the source. We educate them so they understand the process. Zillow, Open Door, no technology can give another human being the peace of mind that we as humans can.
I really appreciate what you said there, because I actually had a co-op. Now, co-ops, I have not seen co-ops since I've moved to Arizona. I don't think they exist here.
We have three.
Oh, they do.
Three. There's more than three.
Is there more than three?
There's just three on the east side. You have Echo Ridge of Broadway and
Pantano.
Mm-hmm. You got Oxford Plaza, WUM on 22nd. Mm-hmm. And the biggest one is Citation Gardens off of 22nd and Jones. So there's 1,000 units right there, co-ops.
Oh, okay. So who would like to tell our listeners what the difference between a condo and a co-op is?
Well, a condominium is a form of fee simple ownership where you actually get a deed to the property and you share common elements. Cooperative is where the corporation owns the property and you have what we call a proprietary lease or a leasehold interest in your unit. So you have the right to use the unit, but you don't own it. The corporation owns it. Mm-hmm. There's usually assessments for condominiums. There's usually assessments for cooperatives. It's just to take care of the normal common elements, your swimming pool, your tennis courts, et cetera. But ownership is the key. Condominium, you get a deed to the property, whereas in a cooperative, you have a what we call a proprietary lease, a right to use the property because you have a stock in the corporation.
Yeah, you get a stock certificate.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And so I remember on the closing, he says, when you signed all the paperwork in the closing, they say, okay, congratulations, you now own this piece of paper.
Right,
stock. They just, you know, all that money, all that signing, you're just basically just buying that certificate.
So typically in New York, East Coast, it's cooperatives. Mm-hmm. Outside on the West Coast, it's condominiums. Oh. It's up to the developer to decide.
Okay.
I just wanted to piggyback off of what Charlotte said, since you asked about the difference between the MLS and we were talking about, and she gave a great example of what happens on the listing side.
Yes.
What I get more concerned about, because I work with listings too, but I also work on the buying side. You have a lot of buyers who, one of the great things about technology is it allows people to take a look at properties. The problem with a lot of the commercial sites, I get buyers, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, I get buyers all the time who haven't gotten a listing from me and they've seen it on one of the commercial sites. Mm-hmm. And I look it up. It's closed. I had recently a buyer was sure he wanted to see a property. That was a listing from 2013. Mm. So I'm just to kind of get back to what you were asking about the MLS. That's why the MLS is so important. I always tell my clients, look at Zillow, Trulia, Redfin, look at all of those sites as much as you want. But when you have something you're interested in, let me know about it, and I'll find out what's really going on with it. So it's, you know, technology has a lot of benefits, and there are also some just, you need to be educated.
Yes.
So yeah. I just wanted to...
One of the problems we had within the last year, which there are differences of opinion, MOS uploads all their information to Zillow. Before Zillow, when information was obsolete and outdated. So now MOS is given information that's current today to Zillow. And the reason why they did that, because number one, when people think about real estate, they think of Zillow.com. Okay, they don't think about the Tucson MOS. They think about Zillow. Hmm. So as a result, MOS decided to merge their facilities and provide this information to Zillow.
So here would be the next question. This is just a personal question on my side, because the condo that I had in New York, my mother is actually in the real estate, and when we were trying to get it sold, it's a very, very small one. It wasn't even one bedroom, it was a studio. At one point, it was a one bedroom, but it was changed into a studio because there was a main room and a bonus room. The bonus room had changed sizes because after the building was built, an elevator was installed. So they chopped half of the bedroom in all of that line to make an elevator. And they changed the designation from one bedroom apartments to bonus room, you know, studios. Mm. So when we were listing it, I was telling my mom, I said, you need to put the proper square footage on there. That's not right. She says, No, you have to go back to the way it was designed originally. And I said to myself, okay. I said, okay, you know, you know what you're doing. But what ended up happening was people actually came in and they saw the place and they said, this doesn't look like 450 square feet. We're leaving. Mm-hmm. But in actuality, the place was just barely 400. It was like 390 something. So is my thinking correct on that?
Well, one of the most important things in real estate, if you look at real estate law, and all of every state has its own real estate law, but what is pretty consistent over every set of laws in any state is probably the number one most important thing in real estate is disclosure. Mm-hmm. And what you're talking about is not disclosing accurate information. And that does happen, unfortunately, all the time in real estate. And that is where it comes to how important it is to work with a realtor who really knows what they're doing. There are realtors all the time who, for lack of a better word, they stretch their listing to attract a broader audience of potential buyers. Yeah. But you really need to disclose it as it is at the time that it's listed.
Disclosure.
Right. One thing you have to take into consideration is living area and under roof. Mm. You can have 1,600 square feet of living area, but the agent will put down 2,000 feet. When it's really non-livable area, 400 square feet, and that's a misrepresentation. Mm-hmm. In the olden days, we used to put square footage on the property, and then we stopped doing it because agents were getting sued for wrong information wherever they got it from. Now we're putting it back on the property, but it has to be disclosed. Where did you get it from? Assessor's office, did you appraise the property? Did you measure yourself? Where did you get this magic number from so you can be held accountable?
And there's always a disclosure on the bottom of every listing that says deemed reliable but not necessarily accurate.
Guaranteed.
Not guaranteed.
Yeah. And in the contract, it also says in big bold letters, if square footage is important to the buyer, they will... You know, during their due diligence, have it measured.
Because I think most agents, when they list a property, it's very common practice. You just looked at the previous listing, and whatever the previous listing said, 500 square feet, that's what goes down.
You know, it's lazy.
I can go all day with these.
You know, four of us could measure a property. We're all going to come up with
And the other thing is, what is a bedroom? You know, not every agent understands that. Mm-hmm. You can't enter a bedroom through another room. That cannot be designated. Mm-hmm. So knowledge is so important, and you can't get that knowledge off a computer. You mm-hmm. have a person has to do it.
Absolutely.
You have to physically walk through and see what is the floor plan. Is it heated and cooled? Does it have a window? You know, so there's so many attributes and other that is combined into the information than just, oh, three bedroom, two bath.
Right. I'd like to direct a question towards Carol. What are the advantages and disadvantages of iBuyer brokerage platforms for customers, buyers, and sellers?
Well, this is a really great topic given that we want to talk about technology, because as in other industries, we now have a proliferation of platforms, digital platforms, for buying and selling homes. And, you know, the benefit is if a seller needs to sell their home in a hurry, or if they, maybe they have children, or they're elderly, or they don't want to go through the process of listing their home, having showings, waiting to get an offer, then going through a lengthy escrow. There are now brokerages, digital-based brokerages, that will buy your property for you. Mm-hmm. My concern with that piece of these platforms is that they aren't always forthcoming in what their costs are. And in fact, I have an article that MarketWatch just did based on three markets where these types of brokerages, these digital iBuyer programs, have been operating. And it shows very clearly that sellers are getting anywhere from 12 to 18% less than they would have gotten if they have sold with an agent on the open market. And that doesn't necessarily mean that that still can't work for somebody. It might. You know, I don't want to paint a totally black picture. Mm-hmm. But what I do feel very strongly about is that people are educated. And right now in the Tucson area, these platforms are literally slathering people with marketing. In my own home, mm-hmm. I'm getting about five in the last month. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, if I'm all about serving the client, and this might serve a client, you might need to leave. You might have an elderly person. And they don't mind that they're losing money. But for most people, owning a home is the most important investment they're going to have. And so to not know what's really involved, mm-hmm. So that's my concern on that side. On the other side, I'm working right now, I'm in a deal with one of these platforms. There is no personal service. Everything is automated. I can't talk to somebody else. I just had an instance where we asked for something to be repaired, and in their automated response that I got, they didn't even address it. Mm. And I have today sent three emails and made two phone calls to try and find somebody who can explain to me why this wasn't addressed. Mm-hmm. And in fact, on my way down here, I got an email saying, oh, we're really sorry, our home team is going to evaluate that. So, and again, you know, I'm all about taking care of my clients and serving my clients. There's no service to buyers with these platforms. That's my biggest concern.
All right.
And I'd like to add to that also, not only the lack of service, but they don't adhere to the regulations that realtors, that we as licensed realtors, have to follow. They sign a contract, and they do not follow. I'm in the same predicament, an agent of mine, and we're trying to get a paid receipt. They won't even tell us the company who did the repairs, and mm-hmm. they said, well, we don't have to pay for that till 30 days after closing. And in that time, the company, who we don't know who is, could put a mechanics lien on our buyer's house. So there's absolutely, they don't do repairs, they don't communicate, they follow their own rules. It's like a bunch of outlaws out there, just, you know, they don't follow the contract. And I don't see how you, contractually, that you sign, your seller signs, if or the entity signs this document, and you have no intention of following it. It's really such a disservice to the client.
They don't even follow the timelines.
Right, yeah, yeah.
We all, as realtors, when you make an offer, it is the buyer's choice to insert in the contract when the response will be received, the deadline. And they don't even follow that. So it's, you know, it's very distressing.
It's difficult for us to protect our clients. Mm-hmm. That's what I find. You know, I can deal with ignorant people. You know, a small percentage of agents who really understand and have read the contract and know what it says. You know, and I get an agent call me and say, blah, blah, and I said, read the contract, 6J, you know, line 231. It says it right there. Why are we having this discussion? If you understand, I said, how can you have your buyer or seller sign a document that you don't know what it says?
Exactly.
What usually happens with some of those companies, they're going to give you a price and you're committing to it subject to the appraiser coming in. And the appraiser coming in, we need this done, we need this done, and we need this done. And the contract that you signed, you will do those repairs. There's no getting out of the contract. Mm. So not only do you get an inflated price, but when the net result comes down to the bottom, in some cases you're receiving thousands of dollars less than you would.
Yeah. Now, if we can just talk for a moment about the state of Arizona, how many licensed real estate agents are in Arizona? I think
I'm glad you
Frank,
answered that question.
I know in Tucson, do you have the figures for the entire state?
July 1st, 2019. Okay? Mm-hmm. We have 79,309 total licensees, of which 13,778 are either active or inactive brokers. And 65,676 are either licensed or inactive salespeople, for a total of 79,454 as of July 1st, 2019.
Right. Do you think that any of these apps, these programs that are being out, that are supposedly not following the rules, not doing things traditionally, doesn't have the customer service on the most expensive? I mean, if you're going to... The most, to me, it seems reasonable that if it's going to be the most expensive investment of your entire life, mm-hmm. you're going to put all those eggs into an app, you know? I mean, what are, you know, because there could be something you're missing. Even human beings that are supposed to be reading the contracts, how are these apps reading the program?
Part of the problem is I think we're going to, in other areas, we've only had these digital platform brokerages operating for less than a year. Mm-hmm. And here in Tucson. And that's why this article for me is so important. I think we're going to be seeing a big backlash, and they are seeing a backlash in other areas, but the word has to get out. And, you know, they've been very effective in literally papering the area with marketing. And so, you know, the word of mouth isn't out yet because it's still too new an experience in our market.
And I think what you're going to find into the forefront is I think the commissioner is going to have to step in and look at it from how does it protect the consumer? Mm-hmm. Because that's primarily the objective of the real estate department is to regulate agents, but also to protect the consumer. And when the consumers continue to complain, I think they're going to have to step in with more stricter regulations.
And I personally, I know that Commissioner Lowe was recently at TAR, and I couldn't get there. I had a previous commitment. But I'm personally plan on asking her about the fact that they don't adhere to the contract. And that's one of the commissioner's greatest responsibilities, is to make sure that everyone is adhering to the contract.
Mm-hmm. In Arizona, you know, Mr. First here has his thick law book sitting on the table here. But let me ask him this legal questions. There was something coming up just recently in the news about regarding licensing, something called the
reciprocity.
I don't know.
That's in the legislature.
About. Yeah, agreement. It was House Bill 2589. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. House Bill 2569.
Yes.
Okay, prior to this bill being implemented, Arizona did not what we call reciprocate.
Right.
Meaning if you're licensed in New Jersey and you wanted to come to license in Arizona, you had to sit through the class like everybody else. About 4 months ago, I had an attorney come in from Chicago. She's a licensed practicing attorney. licensed as an agent in Tennessee, Alabama, and Georgia, and want to know what could I do for her to get her waived? And the answer was none. So she had to fit through the 90-hour course. So this new bill basically is saying, why are we penalizing people that are barbers, therapists, nurses, real estate agents in other states when they're forced to come to another state? Why do we have them go through the whole requirements, et cetera? So the law has changed. We now do reciprocity, but there's certain conditions. They have to be a resident of Arizona for 1 year. They have license has to be in good standing and other factors. The only thing that hasn't been yet determined is, are they going to be required to take a test? If so, is it going to be the national and or the state or all of the above? That's where it stands right now. And that's going to be effective September of 2019.
Frank, when did that get passed?
March 23rd, 24th, and it usually takes 60 to 90 days before it's implemented.
But I think that a lot of us, and again, because I'm on the Professional Development Committee, I really hope that a lot of the realtors through our legislative process, which we do have lobbyists, that we at minimum press for those agents who are coming in with reciprocity that they be required to at least take the Arizona state exam. When you're licensed in Arizona, you take two exams. You take a national real estate exam and then you take the Arizona because, as I said earlier, the laws are different from state to state. And I can't imagine, even people who are licensed in other states, if you don't learn the Arizona law, you really should not be a licensed realtor in Arizona.
Now, they have combined that. Now, there's no longer one test or two steps. It's all one inclusive.
So a little birdie told me that Arizona is the only state where the real estate agents are allowed to practice law.
That I think that's a colloquialism. I think what where you may have heard that from is there are still states where realtors do not work alone in transactions. You also have to have a lawyer who actually is responsible for all of the paperwork. So that kind of sounds to me like that's a colloquialism, that because we do have the authority to complete the contracts in a way, you could say that, you know, we function like lawyers.
But,
I don't know that we like that, but that's the way it is.
And we have clients all the time come from other states who, with their customary, have attorneys. And I never discourage them. They say, well, where are the attorneys? I said, you're absolutely, you know, get an attorney if you'd like. In Arizona, it's not common that we use them. But whatever you're most comfortable with, then I would recommend, if you want an attorney to look over the contract or give you any counsel, absolutely, you know, hire an attorney.
Now, November 1st, 1961, there was a lawsuit by the State Bar of Arizona against Arizona Title and Trust and a broker called Ford Hoffman. And they were charged with preparing contracts. So the attorneys went to court and they found them guilty. So no longer can title companies prepare contracts. They do escrow instructions, but that's not contracts. So in addition to preparing contracts, the reason why we are the only state in the country, we can prepare deeds, mortgages, leases, assignments, contracts for sale, realty. Basically, we step in the shoes of attorneys back east. So it says if a real estate broker can practice law in area of real property sales, it is reasonable to hold him to a full understanding of the implications and ramifications of the statute of frauds as per ARS 44-101. So we do have the right to practice law within certain limitation, but as Colette says, we should never discourage our client from seeking independent counsel. That's why we don't have attorneys involved in their transactions, because pretty much it's us, the title company, the appraiser, the home inspector, et cetera. That's it. We don't have a bunch of people sitting around a table as they do back east.
Is there any type of, does the law get involved with these platforms and these apps?
That's a good question.
Sure. That's what we're hoping that they do.
Like so much on the in the digital world, there are not a lot of regulations.
Well, it's still new. I mean, it's only been out for a year. It's just like we had to get acclimated a couple of years ago when we changed our HUD form. Well, real estate is changing. The real estate department doesn't have the facilities to do everything at one time. I'm sure they're working on it, but they haven't come up with any concrete.
information. And that's part of the backlash that I think we're going to see.
And I'm going to go back to about the license. I also, for years, had a New Mexico license. And, boy, when I took that class, I had to shut my brain from Arizona. They are so backwards in the, how they practice real estate. It was really difficult for me to even understand the teacher when he would be talking about stuff. I'm like, well, I mean, a lot of rural properties and different things. So I think what you were saying, Carol, it's really important that they at least take the Arizona, because each state is so different. And I think Arizona is the least deeded state, that we have the least deeded property of any other state. There's so much open national land.
About 16 to 17% of the land in Arizona is available for the rest of, owned by the Indians or the government.
Mm-hmm. So. What is IDX technology?
That's the data feed, for lack of a better word. You're the technical person. That would be my, you know, maybe Frank, do you know? I'd say that's the data feed.
Okay. Well, before we answer that question, we're going to answer what IDX technology is. For those just tuning in, this is Tucson Tech Talk on the Tucson Business Radio X Network, hosting with Aaron Moss at the Stewart Title Building on Broadway in Tucson, Arizona. We're here with Carol Nigut, Colette Bejaras, and Frank First. We're talking about technology in real estate. So we had talked about some of the apps that are out there, its effect on the industry, and how it's changing the real estate industry in a very technical way. We've talked about how some of these are not regulated and how they may not be following the you know, a lot of the local laws and things of that sort. So we're wondering what this international data exchange is. So we have Frank who prepared an answer for us.
Okay, the IDX exchange is an umbrella term used to cover policies, standards, and software pertaining to display of listing information on websites. Years ago, when a broker took a listing, he had limited exposure as to selling the property. So in the 1960s, they created MOS, which enabled them to expose the property to more people in the shortest period of time. But there were those brokers that didn't have any access to listings. So the IDX came out, the National Association of Realtors came out with this IDX program, says, Frank, if you don't have any listings for sale, that's okay. You can go to another broker's website without their permission, pull the listing into your website, and download it. So if somebody were to come to your website, it would show up as your listing. But the disclosure is, did you have to put in there that it was listed with a particular company? So you can go and dial with Tucson MOS, and you'll find one company has 2,550 listings. Probably none of them are their own listings. They're everything that's in MOS, which a buyer has access to. But the idea is that if you hit my site and you pull up that listing, then maybe you'll call me to show the property and I'll get a percentage of the commission.
And let me just add to that, to build on what we were talking about earlier. When the multiple listing service was created, that was for the realtors. That was for the realtors. And with the commercial sites, Zillow, Trulia, Redfin, all the rest, that information is available to the public. So that is a huge change in technology. It used to be that brokers and realtors knew the listings. Now the public has all the information on the listings. And again, that has pros and cons.
Well, the disadvantage to the consumer was they were obligated, compelled to come to me, the broker, because I had all the information.
Right.
They did not have access to it. Today, we're a data society. Data is available to everybody. It's just, what do you do with all this information, processing it?
And how correct is it?
Right.
It's like
right.
The companies, Zillow, Redfin. So what they do for marketing is that they'll, you know, I don't know how many calls a day I get from Zillow. You know, do you want to buy a zip code? So then when any listings in that zip code, my picture is going to come up. You know, it's a rotating basis. Mm. You have five agents on there. So it's, to me, it's a little deceptive because the consumer doesn't know. They think that you're the person with that information. It's helpful for buyers, mm-hmm. you know, agents who don't have listings to pick up buyers. But you have to disclose. It's like sitting in an open house. You know, if you're sitting for another agent, you have to disclose. You know, first ask the buyers coming in, are you working with another agent? So we know how to respect agency. And then you say, you know, well, this isn't my listing, but I'm working for so-and-so. You know, I can represent you if you'd like as the buyer's agent.
So it's another way. It's another way that technology has taken an industry that had one task and has exploded it. Because what, as Colette was saying, the commercial sites, initially they just provided information and they had advertising. But now what happens is, and I've been a premier agent from one of the commercial websites. I paid $900 a month, and that was nothing. Mm-hmm. There are, and they're pursuing me like crazy ever since I stopped. Mm-hmm. And so what Colette's referring to is on the landing page for a property, there are pictures of agents, and the impression is that they're being recommended, when the truth is that it's just another revenue stream for the website, because mm-hmm. they're getting tremendous dollars from mm-hmm. every agent so that they'll appear on that page.
So let me direct another question at you, Carol. Uh-huh. Since we're talking about the importance of people, it may not necessarily be the best option for someone in every circumstance to, say, use a technical platform mm-hmm. Of these various sites and mobile apps. But what if someone did want to select a realtor, what would mm-hmm. buyers and sellers need to know about selecting a realtor to work with?
Well, I have a list of things that I recommend. This comes from an article that I had published. One of the first things that I recommend is that you interview two or three realtors at least. And you can get one of them off of a website. There's nothing wrong with that. Everybody who in the industry gets leads off of some kind of a digital platform. But I would say at least interview two to three at a minimum. I then also recommend, because the biggest complaint is that people never hear back from people that they've contacted. Mm-hmm. So what I always recommend is leave a message, an email, or a text with that person. Mm-hmm. And to see how they respond, if they respond, what their response time is like. Because it's a very stressful experience mm-hmm. for people to go through, whether you're buying or selling. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing worse than not knowing. So for me, communication is so important. So mm-hmm. test that out. Mm-hmm. I always recommend that people have a list of written questions or concerns. Then they make sure that the realtor answers them. Because what I like to tell people is to remember that the realtor works for you, not the other way around. And there are a lot of realtors that think it's their deal. But the truth is, it's never the realtor's deal. It's the client's deal. And I, as a realtor, or any of the rest of us as realtors, we're only here to represent you and to guide you and to protect you. So I always, you know, want people to recommend that they ask a lot of questions and see if the person's even receptive. I've heard stories, you know, when I have people who come to me who said, well, the last guy we talked to, he wouldn't even answer our questions. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important. I also think it's very important to find out whether the person who you're speaking to is on a team. Mm-hmm. It's become very popular in the real estate industry to have teams. I am not a fan of teams, for one reason and one reason alone, the communication issues. Mm-hmm. The person who an individual meets with or talks to when they're considering using them to sell their home or to buy a home, you may never see that person again. And you may not even know who the next person is who's handling your transaction. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's important, is find out if there's a team. And if the person says there's a team and you think you'd like to go with them, find out what the team process is and what the communication process is going to be. So those are some of my suggestions.
Well, I like a lot of the things that you're saying. It ultimately comes down to good old-fashioned shopping around. So if you are in a position, if you're trying to buy a house, commercial property, or land, or what have you, and you're looking for someone to work with, how fast are these people calling you back? Because there are little tricks and tips that you can get to the top of Google. That doesn't mean that you're the best. That just
no, you're paying for it, actually.
You can pay for it. There's ways to, there's ways to, there's even people that you can pay to give you five-star reviews mm-hmm. all day long. Mm-hmm. Okay? That'll get you to the top. But just because you're at the top doesn't mean that you're the best, or even if you're the highest rated with the most five stars.
The problem with our society is we're very impatient. If I dial your number, you're not available, I'm upset. I'm going to go to somebody else. And that's what it comes down to be. Mm-hmm. We want instant information, ratification, et cetera. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we're busy. We can't return phone calls immediately. I don't sit around my phone waiting for people to go to school. There's other things I'm involved with, too. And people sometimes don't take that into consideration.
Well, and I think who is, when I meet somebody, you know, what I say is I'd like to earn your business. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd love to earn your business, your trust. And at a closing, when I'm sitting, you know, it's Stewart Title, whatever title company, and I'm with my buyer or seller, I thank them, you know, for their trust in allowing me to help them with this transaction. You know, how does a computer or an online service deal with the death of a parent, deal with a divorce? You know, this is a people business. So when somebody calls us, you know, it's not always a wonderful experience. You know, you can get the newlyweds who are buying their first house, the first time buyers who I love because you get to educate them. But so many times, you know, that phone rings and it's the death of somebody, and especially in Tucson, I find, you know, the children are coming from another state to sell their parents' home because now they're both deceased. They know nothing. Mm-hmm. So it's
that
really,
actually happened to my family.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really so important to understand that. I mean, I go home at the end of the day and I go, oh, you know, I mean, I'm sitting there looking at this home that people raise their children mm-hmm. and now, you know, I'm going to convey it. So there's emotion behind it. So it's dealing with the emotional aspect that you can't get from technology, from a text, from an email. You have to meet face to face, find out what their needs are and how you can assist them.
And one other thing I would add, especially for potential sellers, there are many listing agents who will what we call buy their listing. Mm-hmm. So the advice that I would give is if you are meeting with people and you're talking to them about potentially representing you in the sale of your home, ask those individuals for the data that backs up the selling price that they're telling you. We see this, all of us, all the time. Agents, because they'll get a listing by promising to be able to sell the house for more. Mm-hmm. If you have someone who needs to sell a house, they don't want to wait 6 months, 8 months, 9 months with price reduction after price reduction after price reduction. So my advice would be ask the agent who's telling you mm-hmm. the list price that they're recommending to show you the data that mm-hmm. supports that. Don't just take their word for it. Mm-hmm.
So that's where most people, as far as agents, have a tendency to overpromise.
Overpromise and underdeliver.
Yeah. Because we want to take the listing. Why do we benefit from it? Number one, we got to put a sign on the property, which generates calls. And 9 times out of 10, it's not what the buyer wants, but we flip them to something else. And number two, we get to sit open houses, which is another way of generating potential buyers.
It's all advertising.
But it's not a benefit to the seller because you're overpriced. And I'm not going to waste my time going out in 100-degree temperature with a buyer showing a house that I'm not overpriced. It's just a waste of my client's time and my time. Yeah. So the end result, it sits there until you get realistic.
Okay. And I'll tell people, I'll show them, like you say, Carol, comparative market analysis. And what I like to do is with my sellers, I always hope there's a couple of properties in the area. Because I say, let's go look at your competition. Mm-hmm. You know, because they said, well, so-and-so's got his house listed for 4.25. You know, and you know this property is worth maybe $355. Mm-hmm. So you go and look and you say, if you show them the other comparables, would you pay this amount for your house if you were a buyer? I always put it on the other side and say, how would you do this? So then I give them the price. So maybe I say $379 is a good listing price, but I think you'll probably get between $360 and $370.
Well, and that's actually one of the advantages, since we're talking about technology. That's one of the ways technology has made our job so much easier. I have so much data available when I go on a listing appointment. I'm showing people the data, and we have all kinds of platforms to run comparables. And that is a great advantage, you know, over the old days when you were looking at a piece of paper, and it was a lot more labor intensive to try and figure that out. So that's a positive benefit.
Right. You know, by the way, everything that we're talking about, we can see very, very similar patterns happening in many, many other industries.
Yes.
It happens in the accounting industry, for example. Okay. People can now do their taxes by going online, putting in their number, okay, putting in supposed tax deductions that only they know about. Okay. And they think that they're saving money. Okay, a lot of these big box chains. I'm not going to mention names, but we know who they are. So they have these automated systems where you just plug your information there, and it spits out.
The auto industry. Yeah. I think the auto industry, to a large extent, kind of paved the way for the real estate industry.
Yeah. So in that, you know, in the same thing is true with grocery. We're talking about the grocery, you know, store. So a lot of people want healthier foods. So what ends up happening is the automation and technology ends up saturating the market so much, say maybe 90-95% of the people going to these different automated systems, but then there's a small 5%, maybe 1% in some, that are still going to the real sources. For example, if you want low calorie things, you go to the farmer's market. Farmer's market has, you know, things grown by, supposedly, you know, we hope, grown by the farmers themselves. And you could actually shake hands with the person that actually picked the orange or the person who actually milked the cow. You can actually talk to him and, things along those lines. But where is that going with the real estate industry? I mean, in the next couple of decades, as these technologies start to saturate the industry, are all the 30,000 so on real estate agents in the state of Arizona, are they now only going to have maybe just a 1%, 5%? 1-5% access to the industry at that point?
Well, the way we're seeing it in our industry right now is the automated platforms are primarily on the listing side. But what I think is going to happen, because I happen to do relocation, and so I do military as well as corporate. And in the military area, those are a lot of people, the sellers, who live in areas where they have to sell. So I've had to deal a lot with the automated systems as a representative of buyers. I now have buyers who have told me, after seeing one or two of these properties on these automated platforms, who have now told me they don't want to see any more of those listings. Because there's no information. They don't have the basic property book that every realtor provides or every good realtor provides. So the buyers aren't getting served. So I think it's going to be really interesting. And I, by the way, I have a relationship with the Tucson manager for one of these platforms, and I have provided my information because I'm about the client, and I will do anything to help my client. So I think it's going to be interesting to see. And I know most of the brokerages, they're also looking at developing some kind of an iBuyer program, only what they're going to do is include their agents in the equation so that the individual client still gets some customer service.
And at best, a back-end system. Because what we had said before, that MLS was originally just for agents, okay? But now, should there be a universal system just for buyers? And so if I can ask this question because I think, I don't know if we have close to 100 years of experience, not to make anyone
make us old.
Right in this room. But if you were to build your own app, what kind of features would it have?
For representing buyers or sellers, because obviously it's going to be different for each.
The ideal app would have to support both.
My ideal app would say, call me, because I'll take care of you, and we don't have to worry about all of it. I'll use the data in the right way, and I won't abuse you or it.
And Aaron, I think also, MLS, Multiple Listing Service, there's a public site for them.
Yes, now there is.
And we can create a portal for our clients, and that way they can go in there. I mean, I see every time my buyers go in and look at properties. So it helps me know they're still actively involved. And then you can call them. But again, I'm going to go back to what Carol said is about these apps. I have a new buyer right now. And I love first-time buyers. But the problem is she's sending me stuff, and I'm like, it's sold. It's gone.
Right.
It's not. You can't see the active contention. That's why I have you under my contact management. So you're getting the latest. Mm-hmm. If there's a price change, you're going to that property that wasn't affordable to you today now had a price change. Now it's dropped into your portal, and you can see it. Mm-hmm. So MLS does have a place, and I'll tell people, go to the public site. Mm-hmm. And all of the big companies and all companies have access to that to show. So if someone goes to my webpage, they can go to MLS.
Okay, what is that website, Colette?
I'm sorry?
What is that website that individuals can go on their own?
It's the public MLS.
Public,
what is the address?
It's a public MLS, which is something that has been in existence. But what you're talking about is the portal through our website.
But we can give
them the privilege. And it's a wonderful thing, especially because we have still, to this day, a seller's market in certain price points.
So is it relatively easy to find?
Yeah, but if somebody goes on to
TucsonArizona.mos. Yeah. That's the public website.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's not like a national?
No, they go to TARMLS. No. It'll
there
ask
is
for
the
agent.
Realtor, which is a national, but that deals with all the listings throughout the country. TAR just deals with what's in the listings.
There are platforms available to us, to licensed realtors, where we can get information on properties outside of our multiple listing service. But you pay a very expensive membership fee for the privilege of using the multiple listing service. But there are, we can't go on to other multiple listing services, but there are other platforms so that we can get information on any home that's been in the public records.
Now, last year, it used to be Tucson MLS, Sahuarita, Green Valley MLS, mm-hmm. and Nogales, all separate entities. So theoretically, if I wanted to show a client a property in Green Valley, I'd have to have permission from the broker and a compensation agreement. As of last year, we merged. Mm-hmm. We are now the multiple listing service of Southern Arizona. Mm-hmm. Tucson, Green Valley, Sahuarita, Nogales are now all incorporated in one.
And the Phoenix market is trying to come down. Armless bought Sierra Vista because they were going under. Mm-hmm. So they're really trying, the Phoenix area is trying to
infiltrate our area.
Infiltrate. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a member of Armless only because I have agents in my office who work Pinell County and other areas, mm-hmm. so they want to have the privilege, and the broker has to be signed up, and then other agents can sign up as well.
And excuse me. This is one of the last questions we're probably going to, but I'd love as much input. We didn't talk about social media much, but we were talking about platforms mm-hmm. that were specifically designed for real estate, but the regular social media mm-hmm. platforms, the Facebooks, the Twitters, even YouTube. I know Carol, before coming on the show, I saw she's got a video right there on the front of her website. So what are some of the advantages, and are they helpful, and how does social media affect the
business? I have worked extremely hard. I'm 67 years old, so the social media world has needed, I've needed a lot of education and a lot of help. In fact, I may pick your brain after we get off the air. It's more visibility. It's more advertising. It's more marketing. You know, it's as you were talking about what's happened in other industries. You know, we have lots and lots of mediums that we used to use for advertising and promotion and marketing. We don't even do ads in the paper anymore, my brokerage. Every brokerage, the Arizona Daily Star, alternated each week, a different brokerage. We are completely off of...
Off paper.
Mm. So that would be the simple answer to your question, mm-hmm. is as goes the rest of the world, so goes the real estate industry. I try. In fact, I think you found me on social media. I work really hard, and I don't have a social media maven. I do everything myself.
Wow, very nice.
I will say I have, and I will continue to do that because that's the way the world is going. And at our recent TAR annual meeting, and I go to the University of Arizona Economics, everything is pointing in the direction that not only is social media and digital important, but now it has to be mobile. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of running to catch up.
Frank, your ideas on social media?
I think we're all trying to get ahead of the system. It's just like when the internet came on, and that's the same thing the real estate department is having difficulty. Things are moving so fast, there's no way we can keep up with it. Yeah. I mean, you talk about people having computers before it was 64 bytes, and now it's gigabytes, bigabytes, netabytes, and we want to go faster and faster and faster to the end result. I don't know what that's going to be.
Here's a fun little fact. You're talking about megabytes. So we know what a gigabyte is. 1,000 gigabytes is a terabyte. 1,000 terabytes is a...
Nanobyte.
I thought it was a bazillion bytes.
Actually, if you do some research... they say, it's been reported, I saw an article about this, that a 10 petabyte drive can contain all the known information of all of humanity.
That's mind-boggling.
Oh, my
goodness. That's one drive, theoretically. Okay. We'd love to see that happen. Colette, your ideas on social media.
Well, I think it's definitely here. It's taking over. I have a lot of young agents that are very socially active in that. I personally, in the backfield, I go there, but I don't have an Instagram. I don't have any of those accounts. I love YouTube. I think it's a great way, you know, if you had a closing, you know, do a YouTube commercial with your clients. So I think it's the wave of the future, but I personally need help from my younger agents who then keep us in the forefront to have, be in the future with all the other big companies.
Okay. So just to wrap up, I'd like to just go around the table real quick and reintroduce our panel. First of all, I want to thank all of you for coming into this to the studio today for this show. Carol Nugget,
Thank you.
Hey, you should see how she spells her name. You'll understand the reason why I say that. Her phone number is 520-448-6033. And her motto is, I will call you back. Right. So, just watch her video. Tell us what that website is, your main website.
Your home for real estate. .com.
Okay.
And that's what the four is, the number. Your home, number 4, realestate.com.
Very good.
Love to hear from you. Thank you.
We're also going to be posting her LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Zillow, and Google page.
And my blood type.
All right. So she's definitely taking all of the platforms that are out there. Frank First, you can be reached at, he can be reached at 520-444-9377. His official website is TucsonSchoolOfRealEstate.com.
We're not the biggest school in town, but we are the most flexible, and we cater to new pre-licensing only.
Okay.
We just went online. As you well know, the real estate department went on with, now we are teaching pre-licensing sales online. So,
okay.
That's
all
the
right.
new thing today.
All right. Thank you very much for being with us. And Colette. She can be reached at 520-882-0767. The main website is centralrealty.com.
The number to reach me, you can call the office, but I'm out and about, is 520-909-4190. And I just really want to thank everybody here because I think it's so important for the public to really hear the importance of having the knowledge to be able to make your decision. So, Aaron, thank you for allowing us
All
to
right,
be here.
Thank you, everyone. This has been Tucson Tech Talk on the Tucson Business Radio X Network. I'm your host, Aaron Moss, and we wish you good technology.